We're on the phone now with David John, the CEO of War Memorial Hospital. And before we get into things, Dave, a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah, it went good. A little different this year, a little quieter, but it was a good Thanksgiving. Hope you and your family had the same.
It was just me and Sharon. So it was actually, we said that was probably the best Thanksgiving we had. It was so quiet and nice, and it was not too bad not having the kids around, you know. So. anyway, we've jumped up to a weekly update, and I know that, and we'll talk about this here in a little bit, that there's some concern, obviously, with people traveling over the holidays that we might see another uptick. But where are we at right now here in the city in Chippewa County for COVID?
Well, it continues to get worse. We currently have 22 inpatients in the hospital. Four of them are in ICU, two of them are on vents. Yesterday we decided to open our entire second medical surgical floor for just COVID patients because we have had to transfer so many people out of the community last week because we didn't have any beds in our COVID unit that was the size of half of the second floor. So that means we're moving non-COVID patients down to the first floor. Mm-hmm. Which then impacts how much room we have for outpatient surgery. But the community should know if they're coming in and they don't have COVID that they are safe because we don't put COVID patients in with non-COVID patients. The staff that work on second floor don't come down to the first floor, so they can still feel safe coming in and having their procedures done at this point. But we have had to open up that the whole second floor. It continues to increase, and again, I try not to be a fear monger or an alarmist or anything like that. I'm just trying to give you the facts of what we're seeing, and mm-hmm. Currently with 22 patients in the hospital, we're getting to the point where we're stretching our limits, and I know our staff are getting tired and fatigued. It's a terrible disease for those that are impacted to the point where they need to be admitted because basically your lungs just stop working. Your lungs can't get enough oxygen into your body. And, we've seen now in the last week five deaths from COVID in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And people think, well, it's only older people that have pre-existing conditions. Well, I can tell you that our median age of the patients that are currently in the hospital is 67, with the age range from 40 to 86. But we've had a patient in the hospital as young as 22. So it isn't just the older people. And do we know why it impacts some people so seriously compared to others? No. Will the majority of people who get the virus probably just feel like they have a bad cold? Yes. But for those 22 patients in the hospital right now and those two that are on ventilators, it's a serious issue in that there's no, there's no rhyme or reason who's going to get affected this way or that way. So you really are, it's sort of like, Russian roulette, you're taking your chances, okay? I'm not afraid of the virus. I don't care. And it might work out that way, but there's a lot of people in the community who are getting impacted severely, and I can tell you that our staff are getting impacted as well as far as just the fatigue and the tiredness. I mean, every day they come in, they're seeing more and more COVID-positive patients. They're seeing more and more people that need assistance breathing. When they go home, they worry about their families because are they bringing it home to their families, mm-hmm. Even though they're wearing their PPE and all the rest of the things. So it's very trying on our staff. And, if you, for no other reason than to, keep the sanity of the healthcare workers in the community, follow the protocols that everybody knows should happen because, you don't want people to die from it. And even though the chance of dying from it probably isn't that high compared to other things, it's starting to increase. Today we have four people in our COVID unit with the same last name. Well, to me that means that it spread through the family.
Right.
And now four people from the same family are at a different level of seriousness with the virus, and what family wants to go through that. And so we're crossing our fingers because, you know, Thanksgiving was 4 days away. Usually the virus takes about 4 to 7 days to affect somebody, and you know, and we're crossing our fingers and praying that by the end of this week we don't see another surge, because
right.
we're nearing capacity even after we opened those beds. And you know, it doesn't matter how many beds you have, you don't have enough staff to take care of people.
Right.
And it's not like we can get staff from anywhere else. All the other hospitals are seeing the same thing happen. You know, I just watched a video from Sparrow Hospital that they put out for their community, and how tired and how overworked their nursing staff and their respiratory therapy staff and their doctors are. And, you know, you just never know what's going to happen. So currently we can still serve our community, but you know, we're getting up to that occupancy rate where it's going to be difficult.
Of the 22, Dave, how many did you say how many were in ICU? Or
4 in ICU and 2 are on ventilators. And and the issue is, you know, this virus affects the lungs pretty much, you know, and even sometimes perfectly healthy lungs get impacted, and once your lungs start to shut down, if your body doesn't recover that, then, you know, the prognosis of somebody going on a ventilator, coming off a ventilator, is very poor. You know, our physicians are saying we're putting people on ventilators to keep them living, but they're probably not going to make it because their lungs have basically deteriorated to a point where they can't recover. And That's the bad part about this disease, is there can be people with pre-existing conditions, and there can be people that are perfectly healthy, and nobody knows yet what's the key to why somebody gets so severely ill and somebody else doesn't. But the one thing we do know is it's all about the lungs and people not being able to breathe. So, I mean, you know, I know nobody ever wants to think about how they're going to pass away, and everybody hopes it's in their sleep and non-painfully. But boy, when you're struggling to get enough oxygen, I mean, don't know if anybody's been up at altitude before, and the higher you get, the harder it is to breathe. And just think of that feeling, even though you have all the medical personnel in the world around, you have all the drugs and procedures that we can do. If your lungs aren't functioning, there's nothing that can be done about it, and it's a terrible way to pass away.
Well, and the other thing too is that they can't have visitors, so now there a lot of these people are on their own. I mean, they don't have anybody in to can come up and check on them.
Right, and you know, the average length of stay is 8 days now, but you know, we've seen some up past 21 days. So just think of that. If you're in a not on a ventilator, you're not considered end of life or near end of life, so no visitors can come. Now once you get end of life, you can have a visitor, but even then you have one. So it's not good for the patient. I'm sure they get depressed, they're lonely, they're sitting there, the rest of their body might be okay, but their lungs just aren't functioning, and it's, you know, you think everything feels good and you can sit up and walk out the door, but as soon as you sit up, you know, all of a sudden you get short of breath because your lungs just can't get enough oxygen into them to support your body. And you know, a lot of people can't even just lay on their back with oxygen to get enough in their bodies. You know, one of the techniques to treat COVID patients is they have to lay in the prone position. So you're laying on your belly, basically, with oxygen, high flow oxygen, to get enough oxygen in your body to be able to survive. So again, it's a very serious thing on those people who get impacted to that level. Now, is 80% of the people probably not going to get impacted that way? But then again, just that one family member who might be impacted to that critical state, is it worth it? You know, and I know a lot of people say, bring on COVID, I'm here to fight it, and that's all well and good. And I hope they can fight it, and I hope they can survive. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people that that can't fight it, then that's what we're trying to do, protect those people to make sure they can have, you know, 10 or 15 more Thanksgivings and Christmases with their family instead of this one being their last.
And who wants to be that guy that says, yeah, bring on COVID, I want to fight it, and then all of a sudden show up at War Memorial's doorstep saying, yeah, I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, and then when you show up, if the surge continues, we mm-hmm. may say, hey, we don't have any beds.
Sorry.
You know, we don't have enough staff here. You know, the staff, you know, if there's anything people can do right now to help is to follow the protocols, protect themselves, but even a little more important than that is, you know, let your healthcare providers know how much they're appreciated, because they're working their tails off every day up there, and when they see just more and more and more patients come in and their job get more difficult every day, they look at it and say, "Gee, the community doesn't care. You know, we're busting our tails here. We're working overtime. You know, we're thin to the bone. Nobody cares." Well, one thing you could do is, hey, even if it's just a short thank you note or you know, something to send to the hospital to say, hey, doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, you know, other healthcare professionals, we appreciate what you're doing and thank you for being on the front lines and making sure that we're safe.
Right. We're talking to David John, CEO of War Memorial Hospital. Dave, I know that people are listening to these interviews. I don't know about you, but people stop me all the time, say they really appreciate having David on to talk about things. I had somebody over Thanksgiving. I was out for a walk with my wife, and they said, really appreciate those interviews. So, and so much so that we're actually getting questions now for you here.
Okay.
So I had somebody sent on Facebook here, sent him questions, says, next time you interview David John, ask him what COVID medications are being used on War Memorial Hospital patients.
We are we have the remdesivir that seems to be one of the standards. There's some other monoclonal antibodies that we can have access to. We also have the convalescent plasma, which is basically for people who have had COVID and recovered. They can donate their plasma, and it's been shown to be effective in helping somebody who's struggling. If it's sort of like a blood transfusion, but it's a plasma transfusion, and that can help fight the virus. But you know, I know those are the main drugs at this point. There's a lot of other things. You know, the lungs fill up with fluid, so you want to keep a patient dry. And how do you keep a patient dry? You use Lasix, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the protocols, we're following the standard protocols that all the major medical centers are following. You know, we keep up to date on that every day because they change. There's new drugs that come out. But right now, the remdesivir is the main thing that we're using. And, you know, that's had mixed success. Some people respond to it, some people don't respond to it.
Do you have enough of that right now? I know last time we talked about the remdesivir, you said I think you had like 10 doses, and that was a while ago, and obviously before we really started having this uptick in cases. Are you stocked up with it now, or?
Yeah, so far we haven't had an issue with it. I know we got the original 10 doses was based on how many inpatients we've had up to that point, you know, so we had a supply. But now that we've ramped up to now over 20 inpatients, we're getting our new supplies of remdesivir in every day. So you know, it's a 5-dose series, so you know, you get it day 1 and then through day 5. And it's not the cheapest drug in the world either. Mm-hmm. It's like our cost is $3,500 for that 5-dose series. So it takes up a lot of resources there as well. And but yeah, we're following the protocols that you know, all the major medical centers are following, and we're able to get those drugs and that convalescent plasma at this time. So we haven't had any shortage yet.
Hmm. Another question somebody sent in was, you know, we talked about the vaccines before and how you do have some vaccines ready to give to staff. They want to know when the ambulance crews will receive the vaccine, because they say it's important for them to be vaccinated along with the hospital staff. Do you have any idea on that? Or
Yeah, and we don't physically have any vaccine yet. We hear we're going to get we hear we're going to get mid-December, get 975 doses of the Pfizer vaccine, but that's not guaranteed yet.
Sure.
There's phases to the vaccine. Phase 1, A, now they've broke phase 1 down into three phases. Mm-hmm. So phase 1A is all healthcare workers and long-term care residents. EMTs, paramedics will be in with those healthcare workers. So they may not be part of our 975 doses, but the health department will be getting some doses as well, and they would probably be part of that. Then phase 1B, if they aren't part of phase 1A, then phase 1B is essential workers that are non-healthcare. So I don't know where paramedics and EMTs, I would think they're healthcare workers.
Sure.
But the essential workers that are not healthcare related, like police, fire, teachers, those type, is phase 1B. I'm not sure when that'll be. I'm thinking if phase 1A is mid-December, maybe phase 1B will be in January sometime. And then phase 1C is any individual over 65 years old or with pre-existing conditions. So that might be maybe end of February, middle of February, something like that. So if you're not in one of those three categories, then the vaccine probably won't be available till March maybe for the general public. But again, those are all educated guesses that could change tomorrow because of how much vaccine they're manufacturing or how much how effective it is. I know in a straw poll of our employees, about 50% of them who will be offered the vaccine will take it. The other 50% are saying they won't.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the studies I've seen, the two vaccines are about 95% effective. To this point, there are no serious side effects that they've seen. And remember, I think the majority of the people who are the guinea pigs for this vaccine are military men and women, and that's probably where they're getting this information from.
Sure.
And so I think you can rest assured that it's a safe vaccine. But just like not everybody gets the flu vaccine, and the flu vaccine's been around for how many years,
right.
And there's still not everybody that gets it. There's people that won't get their children vaccinated for measles and mumps and chickenpox and all whooping cough and all those things. So everybody has their own choice to make. But hopefully most of the healthcare workforce will get vaccinated, but we can't force anybody to take the vaccine.
Dave, do you know if I know the flu vaccine is covered by insurance. Will this vaccine be covered by people's insurance as well?
Yeah, actually, that was part of the conference call I was at. The administration of the vaccine, we can bill for it, but if a person does not have insurance or if their insurance doesn't cover the whole thing, we will not be able to balance bill the patient, or we will not be able to deny the patient the vaccine. So nobody should have to worry about their ability to pay for the vaccine, because either their insurance will cover it or it will be given to them free of charge.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that probably answers that person's question. So obviously, we talked earlier, and you mentioned, we're kind of 4 days removed from Thanksgiving. And when's your window here this week as far as when you kind of maybe can breathe a little sigh of relief, like, oh, we got through that?
Well, weekend was with Thanksgiving, the amount of testing that was done and whatever isn't up to normal because it was the holidays, but I think we had 230 tests and 30 some were positive. Today is probably going to be a big big day in the drive-through screening as far as number of people coming through. Our positivity rate has been over 10% recently, which is not a good number. So we'll start seeing those things probably today or tomorrow. our, one of the biggest issues, and you know, we're working really closely with the Michigan Department of Corrections, is that they've had an outbreak at both their prisons in Kinross, which has not only affected their prisoners but also their guards and, right. and other staff. And you know, they're working hard. They set up a COVID unit down in the Macomb Correctional Facility, and I think they bussed something like 80 of the sickest prisoners from the two prisons down there last week. But of the 22 patients we have in the hospital right now, 11 of them are prisoners. And so, you know, there's still a lot of potential surge that could come there. And you know, we have to find some way to be able to treat those people, because whether you're incarcerated or not, you're still considered a citizen of the state of Michigan. And even though some people may look at it and say, well, why don't you hold those open beds for community members, we're required to treat anybody that comes through our ER. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have another place to send them, if the prison hospital is full down in Jackson, or if the COVID unit they have set up is full, then we have to take care of them here, which then again, you know, leaves beds not available because they're full of people from the Department of Corrections. Now, on the other hand, if you want to look at it, there's somewhere between 3,000 and 3,500 prisoners out in between Chippewa and Kinross Correctional Facilities. And last week, I think 1,100, probably close to 1,500, were positive. So that's about half of the prisoners.
And right.
With half of the prisoners, we're seeing 11 that need to be inpatient. Mm-hmm. Well, if we say there's 30,000 people in our community, and if you know, if you take the same ratios, that means there would be 110 of our community members that are going to need to be hospitalized. Well, right. When you got 28 beds and you have 110 community members that need to be hospitalized, take away mm-hmm. what the Department of Corrections is trying to do to ease that burden, we're not going to be able to treat all those patients. And if every community in the state is the same way, which they are trending that way, and you may have seen that in Los Angeles County, they put a 3-week stay-at-home order in place because it's so bad out there, and it has the possibility to get that bad here. Well, when you show up to the ER and you can't breathe, and we have no beds, and we have no ventilators, and we have no high-flow oxygen masks and other things to help you with, what are you going to do, especially when we call 6 or 8 other hospitals and they say, we can't take your patients because we're completely full. So that's kind of the Russian roulette we all play every day when we don't you know, keep ourselves safe.
And that's just COVID patients. That doesn't have anything to do with the patients that you treat for other things on a regular basis.
Right, yeah. I mean, people are still having heart attacks. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't even had our first significant snow yet, but we all know what happens when we get the first snow and mm-hmm. people start shoveling. Mm-hmm. It creates heart attacks, you know, let alone the people that have appendicitis or that, you know, have gallbladder issues or COPD or heart failure or any mm-hmm. of that. We still have to figure out a way to treat them as well, and so that's what's really trying on our staff. And you know, they just aren't, you can't make a nurse tomorrow to say, hey, we need 15 more nurses, so
right.
just bring them up here. You know, our nurses are working overtime and working a lot of shifts, and they're getting fatigued, and you know, I want our community to support them, and we need to support all our healthcare professionals. But there's a point where when you're dealing with it 24/7, because they deal with it for their 12-hour shift here, and then when they go home, they worry about, did they bring the disease home to their family? And one good thing is that, you know, I can tell you, I'm knocking on wood so I don't jinx myself, that up to this point, the caregivers who are directly taking care of COVID patients, we haven't had any of our workers test positive, so that's a good thing. Now, obviously, some of our employees have picked it up in the community, and we've had people off that are positive for COVID, but not the nurses and doctors who work directly with those patients. So you can tell they're in PPE, they're protecting themselves. If you do all those things, the chance of you contracting the virus is probably pretty slim.
And David, what about services that the hospital offers? And I know that the Fast Care Clinic is kind of temporarily shut down because you're reusing some of those resources. What about anything else?
Yeah, that's true. Fast Care shut down this week, may have to be shut down longer because we're reassigning staff so they can help with the inpatients. We may have to close down some other departments, some non-essential departments, for example. We don't need to send out bills every day, and we have a billing staff and a coding staff and some of these other staff that could help assist nursing staff with their functions and allow the nurses to be more at the bedside. So could if we shut down our patient financial services office, could those people be up on the nursing floor helping to document in the electronic health record what's going on so that the nurse doesn't have to and they can take the time to be with patients. Now, that's a lot different than when we were shut down for two months in March and April, where we basically laid off a bunch of people because we didn't have a surge. We didn't need extra workers at that point, but now it's the opposite. We're having a surge, so there won't be anybody laid off. They'll be reassigned so that we can have enough staff to treat the people who are sick.
Tough times. Anything else you want to add, David?
No, again, if anybody has it in their heart to send a thank you card, or we've had a couple people send up little care packages or whatever that we can bring to the different departments, the ED, the second floor, the respiratory therapist, the lab personnel, just to say thanks, so their community knows, or they know their community is behind them. Sometimes we forget to recognize those people that are really working hard in this pandemic. And if I had anything I'd want to ask from our community would be, hey, remember those that are on the front line, and even if it's something small as a thank you, it really helps to pick their spirits up and helps move them to the next day knowing they're doing a great job for their community.
Yeah, absolutely. If people wanted to do something like that, is there a way to go about doing that? How would they do that?
Well, I know if they go and send thank yous via our website, we always send out an email to all the staff with those thank yous. I know some people have brought in like care packages to the screener station and said, can you distribute this to the ER or the medical floor, wherever they'd want it to go, and we would deliver it to them. So any of those methods will work.
Okay. All right. For sure. Well, David, obviously we, are praying for all the staff up there, and I know it can't be easy. It's got to be stressful. I mean, and all the extra precautions that they have to go through to handle what's going on, and it's tough. And hopefully we can get through this, and everybody's safe, everybody's good, and hopefully, like I say, you won't see a big uptick this week.
Yeah, just remember, when we were in reality way back before COVID, a nurse would come into a patient's room and they could just walk in and they could talk to them and take their blood pressure, do whatever they needed to do. And now, before you go in that room, you got to put on a gown, you got to put on a mask, you got to put on goggles, maybe a face shield, gloves, booties, all that thing. And so we're very, very, I guess, less efficient because it takes so much time to protect the healthcare staff. So that comes into it as well. As before, you might have been able to take care of six patients with one nurse. Now we probably can only take care of three or four patients with one nurse. So all those things come into it, and it's certainly trying. And we have our fingers crossed that we won't see any more of a surge, because if it stays like this, we'll be able to handle it. But if it gets any worse, it'll be a chore.
David John, CEO of War Memorial Hospital, thanks again for the time. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
All right. Thanks, Mark.